A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, Boyd had jet lag.
Oh.
Hello, welcome to the Unmissables podcast. It's a special Tuesday 5 o'clock release, Kay.
Yes.
Because, as we all know, that's when the global embargo on reviews of Star Wars: Colon the Last Jedi ends. Embargo begins. Embargo.
Hold on. Let's just say you are very jet lagged, Boyd. So
yeah, but I'm making sense so far.
No, you are. I know. Thanks. I just wanted to cover that.
This is the voice of Steph Seelan.
The embargo ends at 5.
That's the voice of Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
And welcome, to this very special podcast. Well, especially in the fact that I saw Star Wars last night heavily jet lagged.
Yeah.
At the first screening for critics in the UK. I'm going to review it. Obviously, our millions of listeners are waiting on Tentooks to know what I think.
Of course.
And
they
what
are.
You two think. You haven't even seen it.
I'm so jealous because, as you know, I love Star Wars and I'm very upset. I absolutely love Star Wars. So I'm very, very jealous.
Well, you should be. We're also looking at our usual glorious televisual treats.
Yeah.
We're getting close to Christmas, so there's lots of special things on TV. And I think all three of these things that we're doing today are very special, aren't they? We're doing Agatha Christie's Crooked House, which is, it's kind of weird. It's a film. But it's showing on Channel 5. It's premiering on Channel 5 on Sunday.
Odd choice.
Yeah, on Sunday at 9 o'clock. And it says in the press release, it says it's going to be in cinemas as well before Christmas. But I wonder how many cinemas
I'm
are really...
So how many things do you know that have gone from cinema to Channel 5? That doesn't happen.
It's odd, isn't it? Anyway, we'll discuss that in full. The League of Gentlemen are back.
Okay, I just need to quickly say, I haven't watched The League of Gentlemen.
Well, then...
Okay, I tried to watch
the room.
It several times.
I thought you watched
times.
A small bit.
No, I haven't watched any of it because I couldn't get it to play.
Okay.
I've watched the other two. It was driving me absolutely mad. So I'm going to bow out for that one, I'm afraid.
It's a bow out.
It's a bow out.
Well,
but I'm going to ask you questions.
I'm glad you've got your... lay your cards on the table.
I've laid my cards on the table.
Thank you. We are going to be talking about it. It's running on consecutive nights from Monday to Wednesday next week at 10 o'clock on the BBC Two. Mm-hmm. And finally, and by no means least, Judi Dench. Actually, this title has changed about 8 million times.
I've got
written down My Passion for Trees, but isn't it Her Secret Woodland?
It's Her Secret Woodland. It is Her Secret Woodland.
Which is, I mean, it's pure Alan Partridge Monkey Tennis titling, isn't
it's
it?
No, it's not. It is.
Kay.
This program, when this program was first unveiled to the critical mass community, the TV critic community, is what I'm trying to say. It was called Judi Dench on Trees, which was quite funny.
Hilarious.
Then it was Judi Dench My Passion for Trees, which was slightly less funny. Then they went for Judi Dench My Secret Woodland or Her Secret Woodland, and that's the funniest of them all.
Yeah, I think it's Judi Dench Secret Woodland.
Okay.
Is it
Judi Dench colon Secret Woodland?
Let's always be precise.
Anyway, it's on. Next Wednesday, December the 20th at 9 p.m. And oh my God, what a treat we've got in store. But first of all, it's the what the hell have you been watching, reading, doing section.
Well,
Steph,
I tell you,
answer
what,
me that.
I've been out a lot. Okay,
have you?
Yeah, I have.
You never leave the house.
I know. So like in the last 5 days, I've been out a lot, which is just, I mean, I'm very, very tired. I didn't go to sleep till 4 last night. So on Saturday, I went to the live taping of the Strictly semi-finals.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Well, live taping, like the show.
Recording.
It goes out live, doesn't it?
Yeah, but then they they have to record
they do the results.
The live transmission.
Right. Kate, I didn't tell you, Craig David was there. He was the musical guest.
What?
Yeah, I know. How furious are you? He was incredible. He came and did his bit first.
Beyond furious.
Took me mum. She actually cried. She was so overwhelmed. She sat down and she went, I'm so starstruck.
Just
she
for being there.
She couldn't believe
Nothing happened and she was crying.
No, it is a Strictly dream come true.
It's
if you love Strictly,
exciting.
Being in the actual
is this the greatest thing you've ever achieved studio. as a daughter? Do you think?
Yeah, she was pretty happy with
Better
me.
Than game
she
married.
Was like, "This is my daughter." Yeah, like she was really, really happy because she was. I'm so. And she was just smiling the whole way through. It was wonderful. But let me say, my God, Alexandra Burke is so incredible. Now, up till now, I've been like. No,
you've
Burko.
Been against her. You believed all the press, all the stories from Dan Wharton and all that.
No, I believed it when she wore that coat with fur on, which is actually a bit of dog. That's what I believed. So that has actually happened.
Dog
so
coat.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, no, that's not good. Right. But, okay, I'm going to put that aside because she says she didn't know. So it's fine. Right.
She didn't know she was wearing a dog.
She didn't know she was wearing a husky. Okay. So I'm going to let that go. She was so incredible. Unbelievable. I just, like, she totally deserves to win.
Yeah. What about Debbie?
Oh my God.
Come on.
Debbie
now we're talking
McGee.
Debla.
Now I've shot Debbie McGee, done a photo shoot with her and.
With a camera, not a gun.
Not with a gun. And she was delightful. That woman, she's 59.
She's a pro.
Yeah.
My mum said
everyone
to me,
knows she's 59 because she mentions it every 5 seconds.
I know, but my mum was like, do you know what? She's the same age as me. And I was like, actually, hold on a minute, mum. You've just turned 60. I think she's younger than you. I had to. Keep her in her place.
It's an ooh.
It's an ooh. Debbie, what a figure. Oh, my God, she looks incredible. She's so fast. She's just like a little like leprechaun bouncing around the place. She's unbelievable.
She's a fantastic dancer.
And the thing is, everyone's so in love. And I did see a few gossipy things, but I won't mention those because that is not what this podcast is about. But there is a lot going on, strictly. Let's just say that. It's very
exciting.
Everyone's
so in love with each other, you mean?
Everyone's so in love with each other. And there's love-ins, there's fallouts, there's lots of things going on.
Did you like call Ray Burke for a chat, or were you just sitting there watching her?
No, I didn't. But my friend Melvin O'Doom was there, because they had like Judge
Melvin.
Winder. So
Kiss presenter,
Kiss
friend
presenter.
Of Pete.
Yeah, I
Bauer
know.
Radio's
I
mean, Melvin.
He's my professional stalker. He follows me everywhere. He didn't work for this company until I did. Right, just saying right. That, putting it out there. So he was there. So they, you know, it was a very good night to go. Yeah. It was very exciting.
Craig David, more importantly.
Honestly, unbelievable.
So, and where else have you been doing?
Now, last night, Christmas has officially started, because last night I went to Mariah Carey at the O2, her Christmas show.
Wow. What was it like? Everything you hoped for?
Everything I hoped for could not describe how incredible Mariah Carey is. She looks sensational. She's made everyone's dreams come true. When she, in the middle of the Christmas song, she sung Hero, and people were so moved, like there was mass hysteria. People were crying. It was so moving.
How late was she?
She was actually only 15 minutes late. And when I went to see her in the summer, she was like an hour late. Yeah. Ooh. I could sense she needed to get to bed. Yeah. She was wearing like this glittery nutcracker outfit. She brought her children
She's
out.
She's wearing a glittery nutcracker.
She finished with All I Want for Christmas Is You. We were just jigging about.
It would be a bit
everywhere.
Annoying if she didn't finish with a Christmas song, wouldn't it?
All right, listen,
Sorry.
Jetlag.
She gave the crowd what they wanted.
She really did.
She's a crowd pleaser.
So Christmas has officially started.
Wow.
And then I've also just started watching Black Mirror, which I know I'm very late to the party, but it is very good.
Old Black Mirror or new Black Mirror?
I started from the first Black Mirror that's on Netflix,
which has
got Bryce
series
Dallas Howard
three,
in.
Series 3. Series 4 is dropping on December the 28th. I'm looking at my watch like it's going to tell me. My watch is just containing the current time.
Yeah, 09:44.
But it does drops on Netflix, the new series, 6 episodes on December 28th. But they're all on the previous website, the Wii special people have access to.
Oh, wow.
And I cannot wait to have a look.
Well, I've just never been interested. And I know this sounds really stupid, but I think the name just put me off, the title.
Black
Why?
Mirror.
I don't know.
This is classic. This could be classic.
That is a bit crazy.
I think it's not descriptive of anything. I don't really understand it. And it sounds like it's going to be rubbish. But it's very good. Have you watching Black Mirror? Oh, no.
This is like the Ricky Whittle of titles.
Yeah, it is a thing. It put me off.
It's a thing. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, actually, okay, so what I've been watching, then you would have been put off this, but I know you've watched it because you recommended it to me. The Tunnel.
No.
Now, that doesn't sound very interesting.
No, intriguing.
The subject, does it?
Intriguing. You're like,
really?
What tunnel? Where? Who's in it? What's happening in the tunnel? That's an intriguing title.
But you don't wonder why the mirror's black?
No, I just think Black Mirror, they couldn't think of anything else. They've just put two words together that don't go together. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, as John Guru is pointing out, you're looking at a Black Mirror right now with your iPhone, your off iPhone. It's a Black Mirror, yeah.
Oh, is that what it means?
Yeah. Well, no, but it's just saying it is a thing.
That's a screen.
Well, it could be a Black Mirror.
Oh.
It's reflecting you and it's black. And it's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is, boy. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, it all makes sense to me now.
The Tunnel, you've...
Yeah,
can
so
I
took a recommendation from Steph, because as we previewed the third series...
I said it was good as well.
Hold on, boys.
Wait. Let me speak. I've got the talking spoon. You both said it was good. However, it was Steph who said, actually, anyone who hasn't watched it should go back to the first series, because while you said you could watch it isolated and it's still enjoyable.
Yeah. That's what you said, Boyd. You said you'd be fine. I said you wouldn't.
And Steph said, to enjoy the characters fully and their relationship, you should go back to the first series. So I took her advice and, oh my God, it is really, really good. If any POGs, people on the ground out there listening, haven't watched it, I urge you, go back and watch it. It's on Sky Box Sets.
We got a lot of thanks for our review of The Tunnel, by the way.
Oh, did we?
I don't know if you saw, I think a lot of them were sent to me, like the casting director thanked us for our review of the show, and like one of the writers as well. Yeah, they were very grateful for it.
Well, they deserve it. Yeah. It's an excellent show.
I mean, it's
fantastic.
But didn't enhance your enjoyment of
them? Oh my God, absolutely. Stephen, how are we saying his surname?
Delane.
Delane as Carl, and Clements Posey as Elise. Now, I have to say, when I told Steph yesterday, I mentioned to her I'd been watching The Tunnel, because that's all I've been doing. And she went, I don't want this to sound bad. Don't take this the wrong way. But actually, you really remind me of Elise.
Who said that?
Stephanie.
I did.
Why did your impersonation of Steph made to sound like a 7-year-old?
Yeah, but that's what everyone's impersonation of me sounds like. Okay. When everyone does impersonation of me, they always start going like this.
I actually thought you were doing an impression of one of your nieces there. I really did. I thought, was your nieces watching the tunnel? I mean, that's inappropriate.
No, it was an impression of her dear
friend. Squealand said that to me, that I reminded her of...
Don't you think she's like Elise?
Yeah.
No, but she's like sarcastic.
Do you mean visually or personality-wise?
Don't you think she's personality-wise exactly
like
her?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
She's just like... She can be very be cutting. Yes. She can be like just very like... Yeah. She's very straight down the line. Yeah. She's like, get things done.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah. I think it's a compliment.
It is a compliment.
I mean, I think she's fabulous, so I take it as that. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, but it's really good. So I have been watching mainly that. Also, I didn't realise that Paul Reedy, who plays Kevin from Motherland, is in the first series.
Oh, yeah.
He's a samurai guy.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Which is so insane. If you watch him, I watched him in Motherland first, obviously this very, like, you know, geeky, put upon dad. And then to watch him as this crazy samurai guy, I was like, what?
Yeah. Good. So that's 10 episodes. So you're in the middle of the binge because it's on Sky Atlantic box sets, isn't
it? Yes, so I've watched the first series.
And they're showing it weekly. And you're on the first series, so you've got two more. Oh, what
you've
got 20 episodes.
But also, you know what? It would really mess with your mind because Stephen Delane's in Game of Thrones. Now, I know you don't watch Game of Thrones, but if at any point in your life you watch Game of Thrones, you'd be like, oh, this is really weird because he's in the tunnel and now he's in Game of Thrones. It's very weird. Well, who's he
like playing? When actors are in more than one thing, you mean?
No, but when you're really invested in them... Listen, jet lag, right? you know when you're really invested in that character, you almost believe they're that person.
Detective thingies arrive in Game of Thrones.
What is happening? This is really strange. Exactly.
Okay.
Or like the original example of Kevin from Motherland as a samurai.
Kevin is a that's a good example.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
hold on a minute. What's your beef?
I'm just tired.
You're tired.
If anyone has beef here, I think calling me Elise.
Yeah, that's
should be the one.
It's a compliment.
That's a compliment.
Anyway, listen, the other thing that I've been doing is I've been reading from cover to cover the Christmas double issue.
What a good plug.
What a great plug for
out
something.
Out
today, Tuesday, but available for 2 weeks. It's something that Steph Boyd and I have poured our blood, sweat and tears into. It's sensational.
Yeah.
We've got our annual festive tradition of all the stars recreating the iconic images of the year, including David Walliams and Alan Carr as Trump and Melania. Oh. We've got Chris Hughes from Love Island. I know neither of you watched that, but he was very good in Love Island. And
I've heard of him.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, and he's being Liam Payne. Tracy Leanne from X Factor as Taylor Swift. And then the EastEnders cast as Big Little Lies.
Amazing.
As well as, obviously, the interview that I was telling you about, Robbie Williams.
You interviewed Robbie Williams. Yeah,
for his epic biography.
Yeah, I've read it. It's a fantastic interview, Kay.
Thanks, Boyd. Yeah. And also 14-day bumper TV
guide. Let me just say, hold on.
Crucially,
double week, 2 weeks of television listenings and highlights and a little preview of the New Year's TV as well. Everything's in there. McMafia.
Yeah, you
set
can
visit.
Want more.
Very exciting new show. And it's extraordinarily exciting.
What you need to do is get your special Christmas TV watching pen and just sort of circle all the things you want. That's my favourite thing.
That's my favourite thing to do.
You mean pretending it's the Radio Times?
It's better than the Radio Times.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's more fun. Okay, get
it's the Radio Times for millennials.
That's exactly
yeah,
what
that's a lot to think of
that's
it.
What should be our tagline.
Yeah.
The I'd Radio Times for millennials.
For next year.
To be fair, millennials won't know what Radio Times is.
No, they actually won't.
Oh, harsh.
No, they won't, Boyd.
What have I been watching? Well, I was in New York, obviously.
You're in New York for your very special birthday.
Very special birthday.
Which
weekend.
Birthday?
40. Rebooted
he's 40,
40
rebooted.
Officially.
Boyd texted me in answer to my birthday message, you know I'm rebooting, I'm now 40.
Yeah.
Correct.
Thank you very much for your messages.
Right, can
messages.
I just say, I spent all morning thinking, right, I must text Boyd. And then I went to Strictly and I totally forgot. But it's all right because I'm going to make it up with an amazing present.
Priorities.
No,
priorities.
I know.
You were dazzled by A. Burke.
I really was.
That's fine. But the reason I'm especially... kind of frazzled is because my flight was because of the snow at Heathrow.
Yeah.
It snowed at JFK much more. The snow in New York was like amazing. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I love snow in New York because everything
looks
like
they can handle
Christmas.
The snow.
Yeah,
there.
They can handle it. They know what they're doing. Mm. My flight was delayed four and a half hours because of the snow in Heathrow. So it was a night flight. So it didn't take off till 1:30 in the morning, which is a weird time to fly. Let me just say that. And then I arrived back in this country at about like lunchtime. And then I had the Star Wars screening at 6 o'clock. So we had to it was the Star Wars screening in a state of
this is such
brain
first
deadness.
World problems,
I know.
Isn't it? It's first world problems.
Oh, I mean,
I was on
so
my
many
flight
complaints.
Back from New York for my birthday and then I couldn't make it to the Star Wars screening.
Before I launched my Star Wars review, on what we were told, you get text messages saying your flight's been delayed 4 hours. Kind of, lucky I hadn't got to the airport yet, so I was like in New York. But I said goodbye to my friends there.
Oh, how awkward!
And we were like, what, you know, what going to do? So I went to see Woody Allen's Wonder Wheel. The new. I thought, I checked the times. So there was this little window. So I ran to the local cinema, yeah, the brilliant Angelica, which is like the brilliant art house cinema in New York. Like, Kate's looking at me like I'm mad.
No, I'm saying, what a stroke of luck. What an amazing. Like, how amazing. Yeah. I wouldn't even think to do that.
Yeah. But also to be stuck in New York and have watch a Woody Allen film.
So, yeah, so the funny thing was, right, this is a new Woody Allen film starring Kate Winslet. And it's kind of like, it's not coming out here for ages, and it's, you know, it's got kind of Oscar buzz for her performance because she is brilliant in it. And I'm not going to give you a full review, but the funniest thing about it was that it's a very miserable film, as in it's heavy. It's not a comedy. It's a heavy drama about her terrible life. She's got an alcoholic husband who's horrible, played by Jim Belushi. She's got a kid who sets fire to things all the time, who's kind of disturbed. She's really miserable about a thing that happened in her life earlier when she kind of betrayed her first husband. And then she meets Justin Timberlake, who's a lifeguard at the beach, and she has an affair. This is the premise of the film. But let's just say it's not going well. So the whole thing is a tragedy.
Is he good in it?
He's pretty good, yeah. He's all right. He's not great. He's kind of playing like a very handsome, arty guy, and the arty element is slightly unbelievable. But the funniest thing about it was, this is a miserable, relentlessly miserable film, and this family arrived. I sat on the end of the row, right, and this family suddenly arrives a minute before it starts. Husband and wife, and their three sons of ages from, I'm guessing, from about 7 to about 13, 14. Mm. And the son sat next to me, weirdly, and the parents sat behind them, in the row behind them, even though there are other seats in the cinema.
Oh, that's weird.
That was weird. They could have all sat together.
This is
and the,
really strange.
The mum goes, oh, I'm going to sit behind. I'm going to sit behind like that. I'm like, okay, this is weird. And then this film, it's not a film for kids. And they must have thought, oh, this looks fun. It's a Woody Allen film.
It's got a fun name.
It's got Wonder Wheel. It's set in Coney Island. It's going to be
great.
The Wonder Wheel is the name of the huge Ferris wheel in Coney Island.
Oh my God, it was so funny. And halfway through the film, the mum like laughed a couple of times, you know, when they laugh really loudly.
At
bits that weren't funny, because there's nothing funny about this film. There are no jokes in this
film.
She's
compensating for the awkward bits.
Exactly. And brilliantly, one of the sons, I don't know which one it was, said, why are you laughing? It's not funny.
Oh, God, kill me now.
That amused me more than the film.
Oh my
the film is so miserable. God. Yeah. So that was my pre-flight experience of going to see.
You've
Woody
basically
Allen
had
film.
The best birthday weekend ever.
It was good.
So did you sleep on the plane?
Well, not really, you know, 2 hours. No. 2 hours, yeah, whatever. But anyway, let's not complain about the first world problems. I did get to see Star Wars :
Okay. Yes.
The Last Jedi last night.
Right.
As the embargo breaks now. Okay. If you're listening to this, I can imagine people like running to their iTunes and downloading.
Of course they are. Listen, so when we left, like, Kay, did you watch Star Wars?
Star Wars.
Have you ever watched any Star Wars?
Yeah, I have, but it's like, I'm not as excited about this.
You didn't watch The Force Awakens. You haven't watched any.
I haven't got the Jim Jams, put it like that.
Wow.
Like Boyd has.
When we last left Star Wars, so Rey had gone to find Luke Skywalker.
She had.
And they were in on like a remote island.
Akto.
Yeah, it looks like it's in the middle of Scotland.
I thought you were sneezing.
No, that's the name of the island.
And she was holding out his lightsaber. And it was incredibly intense.
Yeah.
And now we pick up with Boyd Hilton, who has seen The Last Jedi. Over to you, Boyd.
Well, interestingly, thank you for that very good reminder of where we left off with the previous film. That's very good. Thank you. Interestingly, the film doesn't pick up immediately from that moment.
Oh.
No. Which, if you think about, because all the Star Wars films kind of open with the crawl, you know, where they show the title arrives a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then there's the crawl, where it explains what's happening in the plot, which is the classic way. And then it always, and that's with a space starry background, and then it pans down to like spaceships doing something. Right. They all begin like that, pretty much. So
But I thought this would be different, because thing that he goes to say something to her, so I thought you would immediately join it when he said something to her.
No, interesting. Okay. That is, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but what I would say is...
So is that left as a cliffhanger then?
No. I mean, like, you come back to the situation on the island with the two of them after about, I don't know, 10 minutes maybe. But the opening is a very exciting space battle thing. Yeah. Which gets you right into it. It's like the game, you know, going back to the very first Star Wars, started off with a very exciting space battle situation.
Oh.
So the general gist is that, you know, the rebellion led by Carrie Fisher, led by Leia.
Okay, so those are the good people, Kay.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't know how much she didn't know, otherwise it might be really boring.
It's very kind. You've got to explain, absolutely.
Very kind.
So the nasty First Order, the bad people, are now pretty much fully in power, and they think they're running things, as the kids would say. Mm-hmm. led by all kinds of nasty evil people. Adam Driver, including Adam
Kylo Ren.
Who?
No, you don't love him.
No, but I just love him as an actor. Yeah,
fair enough. Fair enough. Everyone loves Adam Driver. Yeah. And he is, so the end of, remember in the previous one, spoiler alert, Kate, he did kill Han Solo, who is his dad.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you know what?
Yeah.
I take that's what everyone said.
Yeah, F him, exactly, yeah. So we see kind of him and his evil cohorts, and they're running things, and Carrie Fisher's trying to manage the rebellion, which has been, there's kind of, it's quite small. But they, so they all think they need the return of Luke Skywalker, who's like this, seen as this massive hero in the history of the whole situation.
He's the Uber Jedi.
He's the Uber Jedi.
Savior.
He could be, hoping he'll be the savior, exactly. Almost like a Christ-like figure, in fact. Good point.
And I know my Star Wars.
You do know your Star Wars, clearly. So Rey, played by the great Daisy Ridley, who, as you said, she arrived on the island to try and find him. And she, basically her mission, if you like, is to convince him to come back and join his sister, Leia, and head up, or at least inspire the revolution, spy the rebels, give them a big, huge boost.
I've actually got tingles.
Have you?
Yeah, I actually have.
So that's her mission. And meanwhile, so we do kind of... most of the film, really, is flashing between that situation, the fact that she is now, and this isn't a, this happens quite early on, she's in mental contact with Kylo Ren. So, like, they have an ongoing debate, which is so good. But not, and they're not in the same place. They're, you know, they're thousands of miles apart, but they can read each other's minds and speak to each other, communicate from thousands of miles, and that happens quite a lot. So there's this kind of thing going on between them. She thinks she can save him, put him back onto the good
side,
the good side of goodness. Will he? Is he tempted, or is he just purely down in the dark?
Well,
side now?
Well, in the Force Awakens, where you realise that there is some connection between them when they have that big fight.
Yeah.
That starts to happen, and it's, you can see in his eyes that she, if anyone's going to turn him, if it's not going to be his dad, if it's not going to be Han Solo, it's going to be her.
Exactly. Meanwhile, he's under the command of Snoke. You remember Snoke with that CG, amazing CG, Andy Serkis does the voice, obviously. And in the first film, the previous film, The Force Awakens, he was kind of projected as this huge giant thing. Do you remember?
Is he in it?
Now we see him again. I mean, some people might consider this a spoiler, but very early on, you're seeing him normal size, for example.
Okay.
So you see, but he's in this brilliant red room, surrounded by these amazing like red guards, which is, it looks stunning. And it's all about like, how he manipulates and how what happens between him and Kylo Ren and the other kind of people, top brass of the First Order, the evil First Order. Yes, Kay has a question.
Can I have a question? Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the those little things? Because I know my nieces are going to come obsessed with
them. Oh, the little fairy things?
Yeah, the little things.
They're porgs.
Porgs?
Yes. They are, and they crop up throughout in a very, very funny, amusing way. Sometimes as you least expect them, one will arrive, the little fairy thing, and they're very good.
Cute.
So as I was saying, the film cross-cuts between that situation, between what's happening with the First Order, with Kylo Ren, and also there's the whole thing with John Boyega.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
How big is he in this one?
He's got a kind of side adventure where he's got to lead a mission to a casino metropolis called Canto Bight.
Wow.
Where they meet this guy called DJ, played by Benicio Del Toro.
Oh.
And he meets this new woman as well, who's the brilliant new character.
Is it Laura Dern?
Laura. So Laura Dern is Princess Leia's like number two.
Is she?
Yeah,
because
she's really good.
All that I've been hearing,
on the dark web,
Laura Dern needs to be in every single Star Wars movie from now on because she's so incredible in this.
She
Would
is
you
brilliant,
say that?
Yeah, and they've given she's brilliant, yeah, and they've given her an amazing kind of look. She's got like kind of purpley hair and a kind of
love Laura Dern.
Yeah, it's really really good. Yeah, so. Bottom line is, and of course you've got Poe Dameron as well. That new character I mentioned is Rose, played by Kelly Marie Tran. Poe Dameron is kind of leading another kind of mission. There's a lot of, in classic Star Wars style, really, once you got to The Empire Strikes Back, particularly the middle of the first trilogy.
The best film.
Cutting between these kind of three or four settings.
Right.
And these different adventures. And it does that, and it's got that quality to it, that kind of Star Wars-y, all these different stories, cutting between them and kind of tying them together brilliantly at the end. But it's different. It's got a different feel to it, this film. Yeah, you came about me thinking there's a lot to take in. So much going on and so much happens and there's so many kind of revelations. But it's kind of almost more ambitious, I think, the whole film, directed by Rian Johnson, this kind of brilliant indie-ish director. Mm. It's almost got like an epic like last
sprawling,
sprawling.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. Every shot is amazing. There's this incredible like visual. I jokingly tweeted as soon as I'd seen it. It's got an incredible colour scheme, but it has.
Really?
The colours are unbelievable. There's a whole red thing going on. They touch down on this planet, right? And there's like it's got like this red salt in the end, the where the whole climax takes place. You might have seen it on the trailers, all that red dust. Mm. And it uses that amazingly. And there's thing, the red room as well. And it's just it just looks unbelievable. And there's this whole thing going on between what's going to happen with Kylo Ren and Daisy Ridley. And it's really gripping. That whole, particularly that bit of it, I thought was incredible. The two of them, Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver together, kind of bouncing off each other, but in completely different settings for most of the film. It's so cleverly done. And you do feel like they're literally talking to each other in the same room, even though they're not. And they're both fantastic as this battle of wills between the dark side of the Force and the light side of the Force. It's so good. And it's just, and there's some really funny stuff. The whole kind of adventure in this casino thing is kind of played very lightly. And you see all these myriad creatures, like weird creatures, are all gambling. And that's really funny. And there's these amazing, like, horsey creatures that you would
and
love.
BB-8's
like, this is kind of like super little robot, can do anything, yeah. Pretty much. And there's another darker version of BB-8. Okay. But the bottom line is, I thought it was incredibly bold and ambitious and slightly... Well, if you like, if The Force Awakens was kind of like the greatest hits of Star Wars, all mixed together. It was almost like a remake of the first ever Star Wars film, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
But brilliant, I loved it.
Yeah.
This one is kind of like a bold new turn, I think.
Okay.
It's like... It's obviously all Star Wars-y
but
characters.
But it feels familiar.
It's all familiar, but... It's just doing what
also
he wants to
territory.
Do.
New territory.
Yeah, the tone is people say darker. It's almost, I just think it's bigger. It's kind of dealing, I mean, you know, I'm sure it's always been dealing in big things, good versus evil and all of that.
Star Wars supercharged.
Supercharged, but slightly deeper. It feels like, I don't know, it's almost difficult to explain, but it feels like slightly more intelligent and smarter, and it's like dealing with these big issues in a slightly more challenging
way. Star Wars for the millennials?
Star Wars for the millennials. Thanks.
Is that what it is?
It could be,
everything's
yeah.
for the millennials these days.
You know, they are the future.
Star Wars for everyone.
So, okay,
yeah.
My big question to you is,
yeah.
right, obviously you're a huge Star Wars fan, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, where does it rank in all
you know,
of the Star Wars films?
I'm reluctant to say this early because I've only seen it once and
yeah,
I was very
you
tired.
Obviously have to see things. No, I agree.
But,
start with Star Wars, you definitely have to see it more than
well,
once.
Well, that's the thing. I immediately want to see it again. So,
yeah.
you know, I feel like, you know, okay.
That's
let's
what
see it
I felt like
weekend.
About Force Awakens, though, and then I saw it in 3 days later and it was even better the next time I saw it.
I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's up there. So my favourite is The Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back is the greatest one.
And then I'd probably have The Force Awakens.
Yeah,
personally.
Force Awakens. I've been really surprised people didn't love The Force Awakens as much as I did.
Those
it was incredible.
Ridiculous.
Yeah,
I
agree.
I think it's hovering around that top, in that top 1, 2, 3 slot.
It's no Phantom Menace, people. That's all you need to know.
It's no Phantom Menace, no. But
are you going to give it a star rating?
I am going to give it. It's definitely 5 stars.
Right.
Without doubt, 5 stars. Yeah. It's more like, is it as good? I mean, it might be. You know, history may judge it to be up there with The Empire Strikes Back.
Really?
Just in terms of, there's so much going on.
Multi-layered.
Every scene, here's what it is. Every scene feels it's got it's a unique little drama in itself. You know, like proper brilliant script writing. Mm. And acting. And the other thing is, of course, Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, is just a much better actor now than he was then. I think, if you go back and
watch,
to me, I've always thought this, and you know, it's heresy possibly to say it, particularly if you go back to
It is
Return
part of their
of the
charm.
Jedi.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, it's charming.
It
but
is
not,
charming, though.
He's not.
They're not good dramatic actors, but it's still, when you go back and watch them at Christmas time, which you should, or on the Sky Star Wars channel, you know, you watch it because... It's, as I said, it's charming.
Right.
That's why. It's not because you're not watching it for the great dramatic acting.
No, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher have always been brilliant from the start, right? Think how great they are. But I always thought Luke, and it's partly his character, he's the kind of slightly kind of bland hero at the centre of it, I think, in some ways. But now he's a much deeper, more profound figure, this Christ-like figure they all want to come back and save them all. And he's flawed and he's resentful and he's very reluctant, he doesn't want to go back. And help them all at all. And he's really good. Mark Hamill is really, really good in this film. And I think it's interesting that they've really given him a meaty role and he's absolutely embraced it and he's fantastic in
him.
It. And there are just so many scenes, like I'm thinking about now, memorable, memorable moments. Like more memorable moments, possibly even than the last
Whoa.
One. Yeah. Than The Force Awakens. It's just things like you can't wait to see again. I can't wait to see that set piece. I can't wait to see that battle. I can't wait to see that.
Oh my god!
Lightsaber duel.
Can we go
I can't wait to see
can
that
go?
Intense.
I want to go with you.
discussion. Yeah, we can go and see it. Yeah.
Oh,
so yeah, I was. It's kind of overwhelming a bit. You okay. know, yeah, that's the thing about it.
John seeing it on Thursday is absolutely furious because now he knows everything that's going to happen.
I didn't. So hopefully, you didn't spoil much. Did I?
I don't think you. I didn't spoil. But also, I think people who like me, who's like desperate to see it, just any little bit of information, I'm still
more excited.
Yeah, I'm just more excited about it because it doesn't compare to actually watching Star Wars. Star Wars is different in that way. I don't think people think. I mean, if there was like, if somebody had told me that Han Solo died before The Force Awakens, I would have been absolutely furious.
Yeah. But I haven't said anything like that.
No, you haven't said anything like that, so it's fine.
And they do address, like, so like, again.
Obviously, Carrie Fisher's passed away.
Yeah.
So is that all done? Is she CGI'd?
She was completely alive.
Had she finished?
She'd finished the whole thing. Yeah, yeah, very much so. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Totally, yeah. And then now the question is, what are they going to do with the third one? Ugh. It's going to be interesting. But they do address, the big question, I think, is Rey, Daisy Ridley's parentage.
Yeah.
That's the big
okay, I think you should stop.
I'm just saying they address it, yeah.
Okay, just stop now. Nah. Stop, because you'll give something away with your eyes and it'll be too much.
I'm not giving anything away with my eyes.
Okay.
My facial expression is very...
Neutral.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. Star Wars: The Last Jedi. It's at cinemas
Thursday, isn't it?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Pretty damn good. Okay. Well,
let's move on.
Yeah.
To Agatha Christie's Crooked House on Channel 5 this Sunday at 9 o'clock. Now, I think it's safe to say that the biggest Agatha Christie fan in the room is Kay Ribeiro.
It's her Star Wars.
It's her Star
Wars.
Poirot is her Star Wars.
Yeah.
Poirot is her
Skywalker.
This is the important part of it. I love Agatha Christie, but Poirot.
She's getting ready,
I'm not going to describe Crooked House either. I've just decided.
Oh, why not?
Hold on.
She's taken against it.
What do you mean? You're refusing. You're point blank refusing to describe this thing.
I'm going
to
describe Dench.
Can I just say, let's be clear, you suggested we review. Okay, no, you can describe Dench. I'm sorry, Steph, you have to describe the situation for Crooked House.
I'm going to have to just read this thing because...
This is a film. Basically, this was... invented as a film. We're going to make a film of Agatha Christie's Crooked House, which has never been filmed before, I do believe. And it's co-written, isn't it, by...
Julian Fellowes
of Downton Abbey fame.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Downton Abbey fame.
Also, the reason why they're showing this, I read, is because obviously the BBC had to pull their ordeal by innocence because of the
accusations
against Ed Westwick. So... Yeah. Channel 5 have smartly thought,
which he has denied very publicly.
Yeah, they've taken the bull by the horns. They've gone, and also I think they've seen that Murder on the Orient Express, your favourite, with Poirot, has been a big box office success. And they've already announced a sequel, Death on the Nile, both here and in America. And they thought, right, we're grabbing hold of some of that and we're gonna show it now on Channel 5. It could be a big hit. And it's also been streamed already in America as well. So I think they're just thinking, everyone loves Agatha Christie right now.
And the festive... period always has one Agatha Christie offering. So.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. It should have. So anyway, Steph is going to describe the story to us.
So basically, very wealthy patriarch, very rich man, is killed. A former lover, who is the granddaughter of this wealthy patriarch, basically gets in touch with her, this kind of spy. He's a spy. He's turned into sort of a private detective, played by Max Irons, Charles Hayward. And she says, look, I think my grandfather was murdered. Can you actually come to the house and find out? Because I don't want the Scotland Yard, the official police, to come in and expose all of our family secrets, because we've got a lot of things going on. Come to the house, figure out. And he's immediate sort of, no, I'm not going to do it. Then he goes to the house and kind of goes through the motions of interviewing all the different relatives. This wealthy patriarch had married a young dancer played by Christina Hendricks, American dancer. He's got his children living in the house. Everyone has sort of kind of separate sort of apartments, but within this gigantic house. And there's lots of dark and mysterious things going on. But what he has to get to the crux of is, was this patriarch murdered or not? That's basically it.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
It's a good sum up.
It's a brilliant sum up.
It's a classic whodunit.
It's a classic sum up. It's a classic whodunit.
Yeah.
It's in a big. It's a whodunit, as many Agatha Christie's are, in a big country house. I'm watching it, I was thinking, clearly they've thought, this is set in a big country house, so we're going to get Fellows of Downton Abbey,
exactly,
because he knows how to deal with a big country house with
lots of
rooms.
He's dealt with this kind of residential area
lots
before.
Lots of characters. Yeah. He really has. Of course, he did do his own whodunit. directed by Rob Altman, which I've forgotten the
which
name
one?
Of.
Oh.
I'm going to look it up. While you,
a look up.
While you two discuss, what did you think of? Now, let's say you were quite excited about this, weren't you, Kate?
I was. So when we were discussing what we were going to do for this pod, I was really like petitioning, oh, we've got to do this because, you know, the Ordeal by Innocence isn't going to be shown. This is the big Agatha Christie. And it's got so many amazing names. So there's Glenn Close is in it as
Love
well.
Glenn Close.
Who else we've got? Gillian Anderson, as Steph said, Christina Hendricks, Max Irons. So many fantastic names. I was like, there's no way we can't do it. And Boyd wasn't as keen, I think it's safe
well,
to
only,
say.
I'm going to come... I looked at it. So talking about judging books by their cover, I do judge films by...
By the channels they're on?
Partly that, yeah. And also just how they marketed... I remember when this was announced as a film project. And like, and then you get sent the posts. You know, there's a whole series of publicity things that with all films. And I just thought it looked a bit cheap. It looked a bit kind of, you know, whereas Murder on the Orient Express, whether you liked it or not, that film was a big, spectacular, big budget, directed by Kenneth Branagh thing. This felt like a more minor project, you know, a director who directed one or two films before, not a big name. The cast, kind of good, strong cast, but a different feel to it. Anyway, so I did have... judgmental reservations. Mm. And then it's on Channel 5, and I thought, oh, and I, you know, I am being judgmental about Channel 5, sorry. So I'm laying my cards on the table. I did feel pretty judgy about it.
So I was the opposite and very open-minded because of my love of Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
However, after watching it, I came around to your thinking. And actually, I felt that I'm used to all the Agatha Christies on TV being very lavish, quality productions, whether they're on BBC or ITV, because ITV do fantastic ones as well. We've just watched Murder on the Orient Express, where they, you know, it was very like high, big budget.
Mm. Even if you didn't like Poirot, the representation of Poirot, it 100%. Was an incredible technical production, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I mean like epic scenery, which actually you should see in the cinema to get the most of that. But with this one, I know like money will have been spent on it, obviously. It just didn't feel as top draw, high quality. They had the names in it, but I felt like a lot of them were overplaying their roles, particularly Glenn Close's character. She plays this aunt who's very, you know, formidable, quite eccentric.
It's like, do you remember Gina in 101 Dalmatians? Yeah, she's Cruella de Vil. Yeah. She's even more demented than Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, just a bit caricaturish. Yeah. And also just like, it didn't hold my attention, which I'm quite surprised at.
I completely agree. I thought it was really stilted and just like, I just thought, this sounds really awful, but I think moving from scene to scene was completely stunted. It was just awful. I thought this, it's an amazing cast, and every single cast member seemed to be, I mean, obviously they are all working in isolation because they're trying to prove that they didn't murder this person, but I felt there was no connection between any of them. I'm a really huge fan of Christine Hendricks. You obviously just saw her in Tin Star, which I thought she was amazing in. When you were saying overplayed, I thought she completely overplayed that role as the young wife. It was sort of overacted.
Whole thing felt like that. It felt like Agatha Christie by numbers.
It felt like Hendricks was channeling Marilyn Monroe.
I agree completely. But it was...
Which is fair enough, because she kind of is potentially the Monroe of her generation.
I also agree with that, but she was... not very good in this, I didn't think. She pursed her lips too much. I mean, I know that's a very tiny detail, but it was just... everything was overacted. I agree. Glenn Close,
so amazing. Also, the handheld camera. I know Boyd and I had...
this was funny.
I was watching it on my laptop, and Boyd explained to me, because I was like, just look at this camera work, because I felt like the handheld camera throughout, you know... it just didn't add to it, and if anything, it was a distraction to me from the action.
It had no pizzazz. This whole thing was not dazzling in any way, and I completely agree. When you want to watch something... no, but when you watch something like Agatha Christie, you expect there to be a certain elegance. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A certain charisma to it, and this just didn't have any. And I... exactly the same. It just didn't hold my attention. I didn't actually care.
Can I just say I enjoyed it?
Gosh, you've had... we've had... Wow.
I had a total reverse experience because I was so down on it, I think, as well. Because it looked to me like a shoddy knockoff of Agatha Christie. I was pleasantly surprised. Now, I think I completely agree with you. So, one of my issues with the Murder on the Express, which I enjoyed much more, I think, than Kay, was that it was very, it was like a very drawn out opening. But it actually, the crux of the matter, which is Poirot interviewing the suspects, was each one of those scenes was done too quickly for me. And for me, the whole enjoyment of Agatha Christie, because I'm a big fan as well of these events, is that process of the detective or whoever
unpicking
and interviewing each of the potential killers. And that is always enjoyable. And for me, that was missed in Murder on the Orient. Whereas in this is all him, Charles Hayward, played by Max Irons, trying to speak to all of these ludicrously over the top. I agree with you. They're all over the top. But I quite like that. It's very camp. It's almost like self-consciously so, I think. Because you remember, near the beginning, when he first arrives, Max Irons' character, in the big house, and starts meeting all these ludicrously over-the-top people, one of them, I think is it Glenn Close? Or one of them starts talking about how she's a fan of detective fiction. Mm. So I think they're trying to be very knowing. You know, like how in Scream they talk about how, yeah, they've all seen the rules of scary movies. Yeah. For me, they're trying to be postmodern and clever and aware of the fact that, yes, this is in a big house, there's him.
But why? To what end? Because
entertainment
this is,
value.
I don't think it does, because actually you're taking something kind of... Right. I feel like Agatha Christie's sacred. It doesn't need to have some kind of modernist twist on it and some kind of knowing factor.
That's a fair point.
Why? What? Just make a lavish, beautiful production that's correct for Christmas time.
I just thought the production design was interesting because it's in this big house and all the different rooms where all the different characters are interviewed by him, they kind of look completely randomly different. You know,
well, they're reflections of the people's personality,
right,
aren't they?
And I quite like that. I quite like the look of it, the different rooms. I thought some of them were interesting. He was trying to make it visually interesting. I think, obviously, it's basically people chatting in a house, in rooms in a house, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the most part. And I thought he did a pretty good job of trying to make it look interesting. But the bottom line is, I was entertained all the way through. And my favourite thing about it, and I think the reveal, the ending, is really good. I think that goes back to the original book, of course.
Yeah.
Mm. I think this is... I was reading up on it after I'd seen it. I thought, that's a really bold ending. And this was the ending she was most satisfied about in all of her work, apparently. She was very proud of
this, her favorite
the solution.
Novel.
Yes. Mm. And so, and I can see why, because I think it's really interesting, that the whodunit reveal. So I enjoyed it much more than I thought. And I think you're kind of both right. I think it is, you know, it's definitely not trying to be a kind of classically big scale production. It's kind of like, how can we make this as fun as it can be? That's what they're trying to do.
Don't get those big names then. I don't understand why you would get those really big names if you weren't going to make it lavish.
So I think it's not lavish. I think it's visually interesting.
I don't agree.
I think
it's actually visually dull.
Oh my God.
I do. I really do. Wow. Compared to all the other things that I've seen.
My highlight of the whole thing was Amanda Abington. I thought
she
was fantastic in it, actually.
Yeah, she's really good
in it. She saved it for me, in a way.
What I would say is, I think the private detective, played by Max, he is the bland centre of it. And again, it's interesting.
Maybe that's true.
He's a kind of a nothingy character, but I think probably
is. He's meant to be, isn't he?
Meant to be, yeah. And he's not even that
great.
He's not great a detective. Yeah. He doesn't really know what he's doing.
He's no Poirot. This is not a Poirot novel. This is just a...
I think that's deliberate. I thought that was interesting. He's a flawed, not great, he doesn't really know what he's doing. Kind of, he often has the wall pulled over his eyes. I thought that was interesting as well. So I enjoyed it. That's just me. How many stars are you two giving Agatha Christie's Crooked House?
I'm going to give it 2 stars.
Wow.
I mean, I'm going to give it 3 because I like Gillian Anderson, I like Glenn Close, but it's not up there at all.
I'm going to give it 3.5.
But you're recommending it. 3.5 felt like that's quite low.
Oh, well, you know, I'm going to give it 4. I'm not saying like properly...
I'm surprised you liked it. I really am.
I'm surprised as well, I have to say. But it's my honest...
I don't know whether it's the jet lag talking. That's the thing.
It could be the jet lag talking, yeah. Mm. Should we leave? Let's leave The League of Gentlemen to last, because you haven't seen it,
I haven't seen
Steph.
It.
So let's move on to the other thing that you have seen, which is Judi Dench, Her Secret Garden, or whatever it's called.
Now, let's just say we joked about this a lot, but Kay was the one who introduced us to this. So, Kay, you're going to take it away.
Do you know what? I'm going to be interested in talking about this, because a couple of weeks ago I mentioned this is the thing that I'd been watching, and there were some people
we laughed.
Who poo-pooed it.
I poo-pooed it. I said I didn't think people could have... I've never seen an oak tree and gone, oh, me and that oak tree are really good friends.
Yeah.
Okay, to summarise... I'm just holding my hands up.
Briefly... Judi Dench is an hour-long documentary about her passion for trees, even though that's not now the title. And it's based in the secret woodland behind her Surrey home. And through various experts, she looks at the different qualities of trees and how they communicate with each other and how they can defend themselves in the face of attack from deer, roe deer.
Not rogue deer, as I had previously
which I couldn't be bothered
thought.
To explain 2 weeks
Not,
ago.
There are no rogue deer.
For about 20 minutes,
all deer
if you didn't
rogue.
Listen.
Star Wars: The Rogue Deer. Episode 9.
We spent about 20 minutes last week or week before with Steph going, rogue deer, me going, roe deer, rogue deer. But anyway, yeah, and she kind of like talks about her connection to trees and how in the past when people, when she's lost loved ones, she's planted them as like living tributes. And
yeah, the trees are named after actors, a lot of actors
and
in
friends,
the movie, which is nice.
And
which
like, I think it's really her family. Mm.
Yeah, and yeah, it's basically that. It's a
yeah,
look at
it kicks off with her saying, something like, I'm paraphrasing, I've been an actor for 40 years or whatever, but what you may not know about me is I love trees.
Yeah.
And you're like, I didn't know that. I really didn't know that.
This is a program that delivers.
What I thought was sweet as well is she brings in her current partner.
Oh, they've been together for 7 years.
Right.
David. And I think I'm right in saying she calls him her chap.
Right, I was going to say.
Which is so delightful.
So sweet. I was watching it and she said that, and here's my chap. And you think, hold on. Let's pause. Are you just bringing him in as your chap who does stuff around the house?
No.
Is he your... Because he's a naturalist. He knows properly about this stuff.
Yeah, he's a conservationist.
And knows about trees.
He was
and
walking
animal.
Around with an owl and stuff. It's amazing.
His best mate's an owl. And it was like, oh, your chap, not your chap who does stuff, your chap.
Yeah, because in interviews, because I'm a big Judy Dench fan, she says that she doesn't like the term boyfriend.
No, it's good, isn't it? Yeah, who does?
Yeah,
and also lover. She's not calling my lover, my partner. Chap is brilliant.
Chap is fantastic.
Chap is good. So it's but there's all this stuff about the trees talking to each other. And at one point, again, she says,
if you're laughing at Judy, we're going to call
out. It's my natural response. She said, the trees are chatting to each other much like humans do. And I'm like, well, not really like that. I mean, they may be communicating in some way.
Hold on. Okay.
These trees are not. Hey, did you see Judy the other day?
Yeah, she walked on me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to say this. This has to be watched by everyone because it is so delightful and wonderful and it fills your heart with joy. And now I poo-pooed this and I thought, oh, this is so crazy.
Wait a minute, is this an apologia?
Absolutely an apologia. I could not, and I watched this at 3 o'clock in the morning last night. I couldn't take my eyes off it because it was so magical. And the thing is, it's actually more than her, just her loving. So she loves the secret woodland. You get this whole every time something is explained to her, you get this really sort of raw, excited response from the Dench. And you're like, she is so thrilled with just the knowledge about these things that actually she really does love trees. There is no doubt, and you will be left with no doubt that that woman loves the trees.
But
there's more to it because at one point, the other amazing thing is only Judy Dench, right? So they take her to see some beautiful trees and she just gets overwhelmed. But also, she's helped by this guy, this tree expert. And then he goes to see the remains of the Mary Rose, right? And Dench is obviously in a nice Surrey house. Only Dench could get somebody to bring her things from a museum to her house.
Yeah, actually, that's
so they
true.
Basically bring stuff. They're like, oh, he's come round to bring me stuff, parts of the Mary Rose.
She can't go travelling here, there and everywhere.
Bits, she doesn't do the climbing up bits and stuff like that. She's just in her nice house with her scarf and saying, it's so lovely to see you.
Dench is a national treasure and I think she can talk about absolutely anything.
I agree.
And it would make it fascinating. And it's the fact that she's talking about it so passionately and her childlike wonder.
That's it. It's childlike.
It so infectious. Like, whether, before you might think be a bit, this is ridiculous. But you'll watch it, and even you then afterwards will have a newfound
appreciation for trees.
Yeah.
I started out thinking, you know what? I really like trees. I do. I like trees.
But you don't have a passion for them,
right? I ended up going, I love trees.
Wow, you do have a passion.
I love
now.
Trees because she makes you want to love trees, and then actually, the whole communication thing is—it's so nice, and it made me feel sad.
Have you got a secret woodland as well?
I actually do have a secret woodland at the bottom of my garden, and now I'm I have a much bigger appreciation for it.
I'm suggesting a pod visit to Steph's secret woodland,
and we
have a massive hug.
Yeah,
all of us group.
Yeah,
and the tree.
I like
obviously.
We go hug a tree.
We'll have a chat with the tree.
It sounds ridiculous, and the thing is, depending which frame of mind you watch this in, okay?
John's shaking his head.
You might think, oh my god, this is insane. This is the way she, but it's really beautiful.
It's really. She is incredibly engaging, and
she is.
Everyone. If you don't like Dench, then you're
an idiot.
You hate life.
But also, she says that she's going to give up acting and she's going to start lecturing in trees, which I think would be
which
wonderful.
I don't really believe because she's
think that.
But
would
I
be
do
incredible.
Think. Imagine. I said that. Imagine the moment where you're a BBC executive or whatever, and you get the call, and someone says, "Hey, you know what?
Judy loves trees.
We can line up a special TV show in which Dame Judy Dench talks about trees. It have to be like, all our Christmases have come once. Literally, this is the greatest project in the history of
TV. Talking about Christmas trees.
Yeah.
Do you know what was also nice? That when she kind of recites passages from Shakespeare, like sonnets that mention trees.
Yeah, tree-based.
It's like, tree. It's like spending a really lovely, cosy evening in Judy Dench's house, which I'm going to aim to do for the rest of my life now because I want to be inside.
It's more like
kitchen.
Spending it in a garden, really. But
a secret woodland. Know, it's just having a little walk with Judy Dench.
Anyway, we could hold forth, we could wax lyrical about Judy Dench and her trees and her woodland for hours, but we have to give it a star rating. Kay?
4.5 stars.
Steph. A mind-blowing 4.5 stars.
I'm supposed to
give
it 5 because you said everyone in the world should watch
it. I do think you should watch it, but I do. I've had to take a half star off because I do think some people might get carried away with the comedy factor when she goes, oh God, all the time, which I love, but I know some people are not fans of the gasp.
In fact, the trees aren't actually talking to each other. Yeah.
Okay, they are communicating with each other. I feel like
I'm giving it a very strong 4. It's very, very enjoyable. Yeah.
And there's also footage that has never been filmed before on television. Of the ways that trees behave. Okay, now I'm just saying, I know for some people that'll be a draw.
Yeah, they use like scientific, what is it, kind of like infrared or whatever, laser technology to look inside the tree.
And she says, oh my goodness, has that been speeded up? She says when they show something that's never
been
shown.
We've given it a star rating, it's a wrap up.
It's a wrap up.
K intervention.
Wow. I'm only, because I can see producer John.
Intervention.
Yeah. Judy Dench, her secret garden, Woodland, Passion for Trees, whatever it's called, is on BBC One next Wednesday, the 20th, at 9 p.m. Finally, it's The League of Gentlemen are back for 3 new specials 20 years after they first arrived on the BBC on their radio show, the first radio incarnation. Of course, it's Reese Shearsmith, Steve Pemberton and Mark Gatiss, who have gone on, all of them,
to be very successful.
Pretty good things.
What's his name? Does Sherlock, doesn't he?
What's his Moffat. Name? Mark Gatiss does Mark Sherlock. Gatiss. Yeah, absolutely. And it's Jeremy Dyson, who's been the fourth in the League of Gentlemen group, who never is on screen, except maybe briefly in little cameos. But he writes it all with them. They all write it together. It's, of course, set in Royston Vasey, this fictional northern town. It's kind of started out as a mixture of kind of sketches with these recurring characters, and then they'll just be connected to being in this setting, local place for local people. And it's kind of surreal and dark and bizarre, perverse characters. Kay, were you a fan of League of Gentlemen when it first
I dip in and out, but like, I really enjoy it. I really found it funny. It's so surreal and balmy and everything. I really liked it. And then afterwards, I did a bit of a Google because I didn't know too much about it in the history of it. And I thought it was very Little Britain-esque, but I didn't realise that actually Little Britain was influenced by this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Well, Little Britain, started very soon after, and they all kind of knew each other, they met each other. There's definitely like a kind of shared history between Little Britain and League of Gentlemen, definitely, yeah.
Oh, Matt Lucas has got a new book out, actually, hasn't he? Has he got a new book? He's got a new autobiography out.
Yeah, he's got an autobiography out.
Sorry, I was just, aside, I was listening to a thing the other day and I thought, oh, I'm going to read
there
that.
There you go. Yeah.
At the time when this was created, was this quite pioneering?
Oh, God, yeah. So I think it's safe to say that it's a massively influential show because it was like, what is it? It's not a sketch show as such. It's because it had the unifying setting, because the characters were so,
and
the
it's three bizarre of them, though, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's so bizarre, and the three of them are playing such weird, peculiar, and it's almost got a horror element. Like, they're all big horror fans, and I think it kind of embraces the creepiness of it, and so I think it was groundbreaking completely, and heavily influential to a lot of people, just in its boldness, and you know, just them, the three of them playing dozens and dozens of characters. Of all kinds of weird shapes and sizes.
My two favourite bits. One involved a hedgehog.
The hedgehog, which
what
is in episode
the hedgehog?
One. Can we say?
Don't
spoil it. The hedgehog scene is phenomenal.
It's fantastic. And also, the whole expression of, you know, hiding your spare key under a doormat will never be the same again.
Yes.
It's
Yeah, I think that they, because I'm a huge fan, and I think they are geniuses. And I think they've come together, they've all had incredible careers ongoing. They're all absolutely brilliant actors and writers, and they didn't need to do this, but they've definitely gone, why don't we do these 3 specials, you know, to celebrate the 20th anniversary, and also just to have as much fun as we could possibly can with this setting.
That comes across, doesn't it?
And that immediately, for me, like watching the first time, I'm like, they are embracing the sickness and twistedness and perversity that's always been there, almost ratcheted up for me. And it's like, you know, there's so much weirdness and brilliant perversity, I can use that word again, going on.
Ludicrous.
That is a joy. Yeah. But it's so funny. It's so brilliantly done.
What I was going to say, when it first came out years and years ago, I was like, oh, this is just too weird for me. So no, I'm really annoyed I haven't watched this because I was like, this is just too strange.
No, because it's
funny. You have to just kind of detach from
reality. Yeah, you just have to accept
it's just farcical. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, yeah. Because it's so funny. Because the jokes are brilliant. The thing that happens to Hedgehog is hilarious. It's
basic in the concept of it, but actually...
Yeah, they embrace, I would say, even it's set in the setting and the characters are weird and they're doing insane things, walking around naked or whatever, but... It's the jokes are brilliant and the situations are hilariously funny.
Yeah,
and
it's very clever, isn't it?
It's clever, but never forgetting, it is funny. It's like it's not one of those dark things that is trying to be serious and make a big, profound comment on the darkness of life. It's actually genuinely hilarious.
And it's made to make you laugh.
Made to make you laugh, exactly. Yeah.
How many are there on this one?
Three. So it's showing up consecutive nights from next Monday the 18th through to Wednesday the 20th at 10 o'clock on BBC Two, and it's unmissable.
So are they coming back properly for like more? Are they doing more? Is this just a special three? Okay.
I think maybe just in another 10 years. Okay. Yeah, maybe. I've totally made that up when I say another 10 years.
They're making
some point. No idea at all. But it's just brilliant. I think it's one of the major treats of the Christmas TV period.
Ooh.
I'm giving it 5 stars.
Okay. What are you giving it, Kay?
I'm giving it 4 stars. Wow. Wholehearted 4 stars, and I'm gonna go back and watch some of the previous leagues.
Yeah, and you get your finger out and watch it.
I know, I will.
I think that's oh yeah, we've got the question time. I forgot about
questions.
Oh,
you're jet lagged.
I am jet lagged. It's that time. What time is it?
Question time.
I wrote this literally about 2 weeks ago, this list of what we were doing, what the menu was going to be for this podcast. And I thought, best thing about Dench should be the question. What is your favourite thing about Judi Dench? And I thought maybe we'll come up with another one, a better question. But no,
there is no better question.
Oh, I mean, everything about Dench is amazing. But I'm going to say something which I know might be unpopular with people because I know people did not like this remake of Jane Eyre. So the What's the director, Joe? Joe Wright, that's it. So Joe Wright's remake.
The new Winston Churchill film, Darkest Hour.
I am a big fan of Joe Wright. And I loved, his Jane Eyre was actually my absolute favourite. And Judi Dench in that Jane Eyre, I think, is incredible. Yeah. So that is my favourite Dench moment. Like I mean, of all of them, of course.
Exactly. There's too many to choose from. I'm going to actually go for a dual answer.
Ooh.
One is predictably M. Because as a foil to Bond, she was excellent. But actually, I'm going to take it back. I'm going to go old school.
You throw it back.
As time goes by.
Way back.
With Jeffrey Palmer. It absolutely gives me joy every time. Because it's constantly shown on one of the channels. I can't remember.
Maybe, UK TV history.
Gold.
I think it's gold.
It
3 o'clock. Every day probably is on. And it makes me so happy. It's such a perfect drama. Check it out.
Except the only problem with that is you should go back further because...
Whoa. Oh, I know what you're going to say.
It's a fine romance.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean...
With the husband. Late husband, Michael.
And it was created... It was written by one of my favourite comedy writers of all time, Bob Larby, who also wrote one of the other all-time great British sitcoms, Ever Decreasing Circles.
Oh, Ever Decreasing Circles.
Yeah, another classic.
Oh,
honestly, and a fine romance. I was kind of brought up on watching a fine romance. Mm. It was like, you know, I was a little kiddie. It was in the early... How old was I? I'm trying to work 16, 17. About like 13, 14, not that young. And it took the idea it's a romantic comedy. It's an extended romantic comedy over what? I don't know how many series, 3 or 4 series, 26 episodes, just looked up, 26 episodes. But it's sustained. That's all it is. It's just about their relationship and their kind, you know, and their offspring and stuff. But it was one of the most basic concepts for a TV comedy sitcom ever. But the writing was so good, and they were both so brilliant, her and Michael Williams together. I just loved it. I remember thinking, this is just a brilliant, brilliant show. And then, back then, she wasn't a national.
No,
she was just the woman from A Fine Romance.
Yeah.
And then she somehow ended up becoming this massive star. In Hollywood films and in James Bond films. And
she's a legend.
You'd never have thought it from back then, but it's a brilliant show. Yeah, Fine Romance.
A lot of
Dench appreciation.
Now, before we wrap it up, just a quick one, little note to the pogs. Now, I had a little look on iTunes and I've noticed that we've somehow plateaued at 52 reviews.
Oh,
we had a combined goal.
Is it because
out.
I said people couldn't say anything nasty?
I think
because
so.
I would hunt them down. Because as I said before, we know who you are. We read every review.
Listen, Pogs, I offer you protection from Steph, so don't worry about that. But if you could, we had a goal of 60 by Christmas. I know that's now looking a bit unlikely.
People are Christmas shopping. They're busy. They're doing things.
All right. Well, we're hoping for a Christmas miracle because we would love 60. If
can
you
just say that Kay spent about the last 10 minutes of this podcast squatting on her seat.
She's hot. I told you to take that jumper off.
Almost like
I'd be
like
naked.
Like an elf squatting. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's
like a
Christmas
elf. I was a bit uncomfortable in my seat because I need a booster seat to reach the mic.
Right.
So,
did you not put the cushion on?
No, I don't have a cushion, so I'm having
It's quite a kind of imposing.
It is
scare.
Imposing.
And that's clearly because she's talking to the people on the ground and she wants more reviews.
I'm talking directly to you, Pods.
Come on, Pods.
If you want to, and if you can, that would be amazing.
No, we do really appreciate you listening, and we do really appreciate you reviewing. If you want to, let's kiss.
We do.
So just pop on iTunes, write a review. We'll love you forever. Or if you want to tweet us, at Boyd Hilton, at Steph Celan, at Kay Ribeiro, that would be fantastic.
Good point.
Well made. Well made.
We're going to be back next week's podcast. You know what we're doing next week? It's the Christmas TV we're going to be reviewing. We're going to be reviewing some of the highlights of actual Christmas television.
Wow.
And let me just say thank you to Kay Ribeiro.
Thanks, Boyd.
Steph Celan.
Thanks for staying
awake. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Bye.